association with AnnaValachuk.com, the Ghost Show, the original LSU podcast, coming to midweek edition Thursday. What update that is? October 11th, 2013. Breaking down the LSU-Mississippi State game and looking ahead to LSU in Florida, 2:30 p.m. CBS in Tiger Stadium. The line on that game, as of now, I have no idea what it is because I haven't looked at the spread yet. Either way, that's irrelevant. Get to that later. Ways to get in touch with the show and the site, as always, visit us at SB Nation and the Valley, www.andthevalleyshook.com, andthevalleyshook.com. Ways to hear the show is to, you can download us directly from Anna Valley Shook when the shows are posted weekly. You can also subscribe to us free via iTunes to your smartphone device. You can tweet at us at our various handles. You can tweet at the show at Valley Shook. You can tweet at me at Go Show Carry, GeauxSHOWCARUY. I am Carrie Munch, your host. With me tonight, Mr. Dan Davis. You know him as Paul Crew from Anna Valley Shook. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Carrie?
I am fabulous. I'm stoked after a brilliant second half. I don't want to say brilliant second half in Starkville, but much more manageable than the first half. It gets me a little bit excited. Not that I wouldn't be excited for Florida already. We're going to bring in a little bit later on, we're going to bring in Andy Hutchins from Alligator Army, another SB Nation site. He's a blog writer for Alligator Army for that site. So he's going to come in later and help us break down Florida and preview that game. Right now, me and Dan are going to talk about Mississippi State. Just a quick recap. LSU wins it 59-26. Back and forth first half, much like we saw against Georgia. LSU jumped out first possession again right off the bat, scores a touchdown. Mississippi State gets the ball right back. It was kind of pinball football for a little while there. Mississippi State goes swinging gate and tries to go for two. Don't know why, but I guess they feel they need to try to get an edge. Maybe, you know, Dan Mullen thinking it was going to be a back and forth contest the whole way. Try to get that edge there, but I don't know why you do that in that situation. We're not playing. This isn't eighth grade. This isn't JV football, high school football. I think it's ridiculous to watch college Division I-A college team do stuff, stupid shit like that. So, but anyway, LSU kind of jumps out. Looks like they got, you know, kind of get control of the game there, up 21-9. But Mississippi State, you know, give them credit, make a couple of stops, take the lead, and very pivotal for LSU to get that touchdown right before halftime, especially with Mississippi State getting the ball to open the second half. Mississippi State opens the second half. They drive right down the field again, but this time LSU's defense holds them to a field goal, and that would be it for their scoring. So, and after that, you know, an awesome fourth quarter offensively for LSU. Zach Mettenberger again on point. I think he was something like 24, 28, or 25 or 29. 340 yards, two touchdowns. He threw that one interception on that. I don't know if it was. I guess it was a screen. It was hard to tell in the upper deck section, but I think it was a screen pass. They just kind of overthrew. The play was kind of blown up. He overthrew. I don't know who was even on the screen pass. I don't know if it was Hill or Blue or what. But throws that one pick. But other than that, was pretty flawless. I don't think he had an incompletion the entire second half. So, but, you know, they outscore, you know, Mississippi State 31-3 in the second half and route to 59-26 victory. I think the most points we've scored in an SEC game, I think we dropped 63 on Kentucky back in the Tim Couch era, Hal Mummy era in 96. That was in Lexington. I think the score of the game was like 63-28. We've scored 50 a couple of times against SEC opponents, but, it's been a while since we put, you know, nearly 60 points on the board against an SEC opponent, especially on a road. So I was real happy to see that. So, Dan, your thoughts, initial thoughts on that game.
Yeah, you summed it up really well. It's getting to a point with this team where it's kind of like, can we just not play the second quarter and just go ahead and skip to halftime? Because it seems like every second quarter we just seem to melt down. And we jump out to early leads against everyone with the exception of Georgia, and then we just kind of fall off the map. But overall, it's been the same story every week with our offense. Mettenberger is just completely in his zone right now, and he's playing out of his mind. making very few mistakes. He did throw the interception, like you said, but he was pressured and kind of just, I think he was trying to get rid of it. It's just bad luck, more or less. But and defense is still just kind of a work in progress. They looked a lot better in the second half and really started to put the clamps down some outside of a couple drives. But I think Chavis is still trying to find the pieces that work there. And the offense is just humming with Landry and Beckham doing damage through the air. And the running game seems to get slow started or break off a big play and then go back to a bunch of short gains. But ultimately, the numbers tend to look good at the end of the night.
Yeah, no question. You take away a few of LSU's long runs. I mean, they didn't average, I think, with maybe 3 yards a carry if you take away those long runs. But I really don't care. I mean, when we're throwing a ball, when we're throwing a ball for 300 yards a game, I don't really care. I mean, because teams are still insistent on trying to load the box and dare us to throw the ball. And I don't know why they're doing that. It's fun. Trust me, I'm glad. Yeah. You know, I'll be really curious to see what Mel Muschamp does on Saturday, because I don't know. I mean, Georgia did it. And it seems like SEC teams are still trying to do that, and I just don't understand why. I mean, so, but you know, all fault, you know, all intents and purposes, let them. You know, whatever. You know, and that's one thing we kind of wary of. We didn't really touch on the injury aspect in the beginning of the show, but Landry, we saw, was banged up. He went to halftime. He walked off the field right before half, limping, but came back out in the second half, gutted it out as only you can expect Jarvis Landry to do. Was in a walking boot, I think, what, Monday, and they said he practiced today, limited, but he's going to suit up. He's gonna go. You know, how much he goes, we'll see, but you know, but Miles touched on it in the presser on Monday. Who would have banged up guys? It was Lawson, Taj Jones. He said who was the furthest away from being back, and there was somebody else who I think was hurt. That's already practicing. Is definitely gonna play. I can't remember who that was. Maybe it was just Lawson, Landry, and Jones. Maybe that was the only three. But you know, everything else, you know, good. I mean, like you said, the defense, I thought, you know, finally, you know, it wasn't tremendous pressure. Finally got a sack for the first time. And I can't remember him sacking Nick Marshall at all in the Auburn game, to be honest with you. Maybe they got one in the first half. I know they didn't get anything in the second half. It was good to see him pressure. They forced a couple of errant passes. Tre'Davious White picks one off. It was a bad overthrow because Jamion Lewis was open on that play, but you know, the pressure kind of, and I can't remember who threw it. I can't remember if that was Russell or Prescott that threw that. But he was getting pressure from the backside, which forced him to get rid of the ball. And that's been an LSU defensive MO in the past, and that's something that they need to try to continue to do.
Yeah, I really agree. It's the first time that we got any type of pressure in a while, and it was definitely been a frustration of mine, especially against Georgia. There was just nothing against Georgia. Murray had all day, and he played well. And they did mix in some short passes to kind of, you know, throw us off in that. But it really, we've lacked in the pass rush. And I think it's affected the defense all the way, you know, back into our secondary, because those guys can't cover forever. And even if they're still trying to find the right pieces, and they do find the right pieces, those guys are going to get beat if there's no rush up front. So it's really going to start up front, and that's going to be where the defense needs to improve. I think Daniel Hunter's really starting to come on and be a better player by the week for us, and I think that's really helped.
Is he number 94?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought so. I rewatched it. I kind of skimmed through the game on DVR yesterday and the day before, and was just kind of skimming through the defensive series, and I saw him on the field, and I was pretty – I couldn't remember who that was. I know 46 is Heron. I saw him in the game.
Yeah, I think he's not,
yeah, I know he played some. I really didn't keep an eye to see if Beckwith was on the field much, but you know, we saw Rashard Robinson at cornerback.
Yeah.
We saw Corey Thompson at safety, and a couple of those plays, our defensive backs just need to learn how to get their head turned around, because they had, I mean, the one touchdown that was in the corner of the end zone. I think it was Thompson that was on the coverage, and he just kind of olayed the receiver trying to avoid contact, and just that if he turns around and plays the ball, he has just as much right to the ball as the receiver does. He doesn't get called for pass interference. But the fact that he just didn't turn around and look for the ball, he just looked, I guess ball skills is what kind of we're looking for out of those guys.
Yeah.
And that's something that they're lacking on right now. But, you know, we didn't see bad communication issues like we saw against Georgia, which is a step in the right direction. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, it was more or less, you know, two Mississippi State touchdowns, that one to the corner, and that other one where Russell just kind of threw it up for grabs. And again, Tre'Davious White was spot on with the coverage. He just didn't turn his head around and tried to jump, not looking at the ball. And the Mississippi State guy came down with it. And he, you know, of course, Tre'Davious White jumping, not looking. And of course, he falls down and the guy goes, you know, guy runs in for a touchdown after that. So, I mean, these are all correctable things. But like you said, Dan, if we can't get a pass rush, we can forget about it. We've got to see better. And we saw bits and pieces of that Saturday night. So hopefully that continues as far as getting pressure with the front four, coming up with some different, you know, blitz schemes at times, some creative things to, you know, to get some pressure on the quarterbacks, especially with a guy coming in from Florida, you know, young guy, new starter because Driscoll's hurt. I believe Tyler Murphy's his name, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
You know, in Tiger Stadium, we need to make it loud and we need to get some early pressure on him to force him into a mistake. I mean, I think that's pivotal as far as Saturday goes, as far as trying to establish something defensively to get our offense going a little bit against what's going to be a very stout defense. So getting short fields can only help us on Saturday, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. I mean, Murphy can move around a little bit, but I wonder if they will try and come after him early just to his first start at Tiger Stadium. That's always overwhelming, big-time game. The crowd should be into it, even though it's a 2:30 start, and just turn him loose and try and get him rattled early since he's a young guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you know, you're playing with fire, I guess, a little bit, because what we haven't seen from LSU too well is containing, you know, running quarterbacks very well, and that's an area of concern pretty much going forward for the rest of the season, because that's all we basically played minus Alabama and probably Arkansas. Everybody else can get around good in the pocket. Even Bo Wallace can. So that's definitely something that, you know, LSU needs to kind of just buckle down on. And just, you know, if you're going to bring pressure, you've got to have a backer back there trying to play quarterback contain or quarterback spy, some type of position like that to minimize, especially when they get in third and longs. It just seems like every time, if we do get pressure, a quarterback will step right into the pocket and he'll have a wide open field to run into. And that's just something that just like kills you, just absolutely kills you. So
Prescott killed us on that. I mean, I just looking at the numbers, he finished with 103 yards rushing. I know he had a couple 20 plus yard runs, and mostly exactly like you said, third and long, he's dropping back to pass, and we get a decent rush from the edge, but I step right through the middle and they're wide open field for him to go. So it's frustrating when that happens.
Yeah, it is. It is. And that's just, you know, I guess it's something we have to live with for right now. And, you know, if offense keeps at the track that they're going, you know, it's something that it'll give us headaches, but knowing that our offense can move the ball right down the field and keep scoring, you know, but, you know, same as it's been in the past, you know, we couldn't expect the defense to go to force an offense into three and out every time in years past. We can't expect our offense to drive down a field and score 7 points every time either. So,
yeah,
it's,
for sure.
You know, it's like I was talking about last week with Billy on the show, we just can't seem to find a happy medium somewhere. You know, it's either goose or gander. You know, offense is good. The defense is just, you know, they don't have to be top 15, top 20, just be minimal. Like we said about our offense in years past, just be top 50, top 60.
Yeah.
And we just, you know, let's not see them get 15, 20 yards of play. Let's, you know, let's stop. Let's get a couple three and outs here and there. You know, it don't hurt.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to see it every down. I don't have to see it every series, but, you know. So, you know.
And then like the Georgia game, they do get a three and out, and it seemed like a huge stop. And
right.
Beckham fumbles the punt. I mean, that's a frustrating mistake, but it hurts when they do stand up and then we can't back it up and support them, I guess.
Yeah, that was
on the field.
Yeah, knowing the way that game was going back and forth, to have that opportunity, that missed opportunity was just, and I don't want to, I'm not singling out Beckham because he's not the reason we lost that game. So,
yeah.
You know, we just had a glimpse back into the 2012 back them a little bit there, and hopefully that gets corrected. So hopefully we don't see that. Hopefully we don't see that happen again. But you know, all in all, you can't argue with going on the road and winning 59-26, and that's I guess basically the moral of this story. You know, I think Mettenberger was also named SEC Offensive Player of the Week. He got named for something else yesterday, some kind of Manning thing or some kind of Manning Weekly Award they're giving out now or something. I heard on the radio. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure on that one. But you know, Beckham 9 for 179, but caught 2 touchdowns. You know, even Landry being hurt, I think he had 8 catches for 90 some yards.
Yeah.
Trayvon Doral, again, we talk about, you know, we've talked about every week about a third receiver stepping up, and me and Billy talked about it. Maybe you just don't need a guy who can step, a third guy who can just step up consistently. Maybe it's just a guy that you need in certain spots. I mean, Doral makes that big catch on 3rd and 19, which keeps the drive going. You know, you got Dixon, you know, whenever you want. Basically, if they're going to load the box, you have Dixon over open a seam anytime you want. So,
And then we had Boone against Georgia make a big catch this one.
Right. So it'll be interesting. If Landry, you know, is struggling and can't go and midway through the game has to be taken out, be interesting to see what we do because, you know, Florida's got 2 very good cornerbacks and
they do.
I imagine they're gonna double Odell Beckham and force, you know, other receivers to beat us if Landry's not in the game. So it's got a lot of LSU fans on pins and needles here a little bit going forward. So you know, we shall see. And to finish breaking down Florida's, we'll move right into that. We'll welcome in Mr. Andy Hutchins from Alligator Army, another SB Nation blog. So how you doing, Andy?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for holding on and listening to me and Dan talk there a little bit. You know, Florida coming in, new quarterback Tyler Murphy. I hate to wish ill will on any one player, but was Jeff Driskel getting hurt a blessing?
I don't think so. I mean, this has been a discussion for the last month, really, in Florida land. And I've been frustrated because there were people who were genuinely happy that Jeff Driskel got hurt, which is just it's mind-blowing to me. I mean, apart from, you know, I can't agree with that, obviously. It's just nuts to me that people were actually happy that a guy who, you know, for whatever faults he did have, led Florida to 10 wins last year, led Florida to, you know, wins over LSU and over over Florida State, over South Carolina, over Texas A&M, at Texas A&M, first SEC game they ever played. They were revved up for Driskel's first ever real start, and he comes out and does everything just right in that game. So, I mean, it's really tough for me to stomach the idea that Jeff Driskel, having a couple bad games, and you know, I think it's pretty difficult to disagree that Miami was definitely a bad game for him. You could probably make the argument that Louisville was a bad game for him too, but that one game in Miami feels like it turned the entire perception of Driskel around. And then, you know, it's maybe 8-9 snaps before Driskel gets hurt in the Tennessee game, and you know, suddenly it's no longer his team. And you know, to Tyler Murphy's credit, he's made it pretty easy to forget him, but it's weird that, you know, the guy everyone thought was going to be the most important player for this team, Jeff Driskel, gets hurt, and Florida hasn't missed much of a beat at all at the quarterback position.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with 39 of 54 for 530 yards and 5 touchdowns.
Yeah, he's been pretty good.
Yeah, and that's been, you see, Driskel got hurt in the Tennessee game, so 2.5 games he's done that. I mean, that's, you know, that's solid. Yeah.
Murphy has now been healthy and the guy for 11 quarters this year. Driskel was the guy for parts of 9, really. So it's Murphy's team, definitely.
Oh, no question. Talk a little bit about how do you see with Murphy, how do you see Florida attacking LSU defense? We'll start on that side of the ball. And just talk about a little bit about that, then we'll get into like some playmakers and things like that other than Murphy.
Yeah, I mean, I think Murphy's the thing he's done best, the greatest gift he's got, is that he works through progressions and takes what the defense gives him. I mean, he threw a pick that could have been a pick six against Kentucky, but that was maybe his only really bad decision in 3 games. I mean, he's just not made bad decisions as a thrower. He, you know, if he's making a throw, it's in a place where only his guy can really get it. And if he's making a throw, it's usually to a guy who's wide open. And if he's not making a throw, it's probably because he's decided to tuck it and run. And he's made some pretty good decisions in that respect, too. So, you know, that decision-making, that's something that a lot of Florida fans have liked after Driscoll's higher variance decision-making, we'll call it. So, you know, that decision-making and Florida's offense being designed, really, for the sort of low variance, get the first downs if you can get them, run the clock if you want. You know, try to do everything in your power to not put the defense in bad positions. It's not a terrible theory of offense. It's maybe not the most aesthetically pleasing one, but it's worked out, and Murphy's been the guy that stewarded it, really. So,
all right. Who are some of the guys Murphy's going to be throwing the ball to? We know about, and we've seen running backs come and go forward in the past. I see two names up here, top of the leaderboard as far as rushing stats that I do not recognize. Talk a little bit about them at first, because, I mean, it seems to be the bulk of what y'all do offensively is definitely running the football first.
Yeah, it's definitely running the ball, and it's probably going to be running the ball with Matt Jones first and foremost, because I think Florida's really kind of in an in-between part between Jones and Brown, Mack Brown being the two sort of co-starters at this point. Jones has been listed as the number one guy in the depth chart. He's gotten the lion's share of the carries since he came back, but he just doesn't really look like the guy we had at the end of the game. Excuse me. I mean, he was running really hard at the end of 2012, and then everyone on Earth in the Florida world thought that he was going to be really good coming into the season, and then he gets a viral infection at the end of July and misses most of fall practice. And so people are really sort of worried, you know, at that point, will he come back as he was? And he hasn't, really. He's come back. He had his career-high game against Kentucky, but it was Kentucky, and Mack Brown's not that much worse than Jones is, and both of them have some vision issues. And so it's really not been the same sort of running attack that Florida had last year when Mike Gillis was the go-to guy, never lost yardage, you know, could rip off 5, 6, 7 yards, 5 or 6 times a drive. And this is a different offense, really, because of that. And, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily worse, because this offense, despite being maybe not quite as productive on the ground or quite as consistent on the ground, has still gone over 100 yards in each game and is still being able mostly to move the chains on the ground. But I don't know that you necessarily have, if you're a Florida fan, quite as much confidence in Jones and Brown coming into this game as you did maybe even in September, maybe coming into the offseason. So, you know, the running game feels like it's maybe not even Florida's strength right now, given how Murphy's played in the passing game. So it's a new and weird feeling for us after 2.5 years of Will Muschamp.
Right. Just looking at some of the other guys in the receiving corps, is Trey Burton, is he getting the senior citizen discount of Golden Corral yet?
Yeah, I mean, he's been around for 97 years, feels like. Right?
Jesus Christ.
Kentucky fans probably feel like he's been around since 97.
My goodness, he's been around forever.
He's been around forever, and the thing was, he was great in his limited ways in his freshman year, and he sort of added different things to his game. And now he's a wide receiver. He's really not used as a running back as much as he was, and he's been a really good wide receiver. I think he's got the best hands on the team, which is nuts. I mean, I was the kind of person who didn't think Trey Burton was all that good, despite some of the gaudy statistics early on, but he's proved me wrong. I mean, he's been really, really, really good this year as sort of a slot guy. And he's been a slot guy in a weird offense that has the number one guy is definitely Quentin Dunbar. He's your go-to wide receiver. He's not really had the breakout. Maybe you want some one guy, but he's definitely the most talented of the three wide receivers that they look at. And then Solomon Patton's a smaller guy who I would think would be a pretty good slot guy, but they don't really use him as a slot guy. And then Burton, they throw in the slot, despite the fact that he's a little bit bigger and probably not the fastest of the three guys, and maybe not even the quickest. So it's weird. Those three guys are basically the Florida passing offense. There's not a whole lot of help from the freshman DeMarcus Robinson and Ahmad Fullwood, who people thought were going to come in and do good things. And then, you know, you can throw the ball to Matt Jones, but yeah, that don't do that all that often, and maybe you only get 5 or 6 yards a pop there. And then Florida's tight ends have 2 catches this year through 5 games. So the tight ends are extra linemen at this point. So it's really those three guys. It's Quentin Dunbar, it's Solomon Patton, it's Trey Burton, and maybe you get a couple catches from another couple guys. But I think those three guys a lot more than I used to like Florida's receivers when it wasn't Joker Phillips coaching him.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think Bird should find him. He's got to be a senior by now, right?
Oh, yeah, he's a senior.
Okay.
Go ahead.
He should try to find a way to stick around and play some offensive line next year so we can have every position on offense covered.
He has started at quarterback, running back, and wide receiver.
Yeah.
All three of those positions. It's nuts. He's been
knocked out tight end and offensive line. He's got it all covered, man.
I think he may have started tight end somewhere along the line, too. So, you know, as long as he can start one time, maybe senior day, he'll come out and start.
There you go. switching gears to defense, you know, Florida statistically, easily, hands down, the best defense in the SEC. Are you concerned at all coming into this game because the level of competition that Florida's played, really, aside from Miami, really hasn't been all that tough? And you can say the same thing about LSU's offense too. We haven't played very stout defenses, but is that a concern for you coming into Tiger Stadium on Saturday?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it is, especially for me, because I look at some of these advanced stats and I pay attention to these things. And Florida's been really good on defense, but Florida's been really good on defense against teams that, you know, Kentucky did a pretty good job on a per-play basis, but that's that and Miami's offense is really the two that I thought were good this year. Toledo's could have been good. They haven't really kind of gotten to the peak that they were at last year. And then Tennessee, the less discussed about Tennessee, the better. So, you know, Florida's played really good defense, and they've made teams that have some talent look a lot worse than they are, but maybe they weren't good to begin with. I mean, you could look at what Florida did in the last three quarters against Miami and be pretty confident, I think, that Florida's going to do good things against better offenses. But Florida had Dominic Easley then, and Dominic Easley was definitely the best player on the field when Florida's defense was on the field against Miami. So, you know, I don't know exactly how Florida's defense is going to react to an LSU offense that can stress it in a lot of different ways. I mean, I don't think Florida's seen receivers as good as Landry and Beckham. I definitely don't think Florida's seen as good a running back as Jeremy Hill. All due respect to Alex Collins and Duke Johnson, who are good, but it's not the same. And then Zach Mettenberger is definitely the best quarterback Florida's seen. So, you know, three top of the line guys on your offense is going to make it pretty hard for you to defend everything correctly, even if you're Florida, even if you've got Will Muschamp calling the plays. But, you know, that's why they play the games, right? This is going to be a fun sort of
question. Yeah.
We figure out what we are.
This is definitely strength versus strength. I mean, it can't get more, you know, clear cut than that. It's LSU's offense versus Florida's defense. And, you know, what can happen? Can Florida's, you know, less potent offense but efficient offense move the ball well enough against, you know, LSU's suspect defense to keep LSU's offense off the field and keep them at bay a little bit? And can Florida's defense kind of, you know, contain LSU's offense? And can LSU's offense move the ball on, you know, the best defense in the SEC? It is tailor-made for just a classic strength for a strength type thing, and it's going to be really interesting to see what happens Saturday afternoon.
I think it's going to be really – I don't think that this game is going to be decided by Florida's defense against LSU's offense. I think it's got to be those other two units that you're going to see. Maybe
right.
The special teams too. But, yeah, I think those two are going to play to a stalemate, and it's going to be every other unit that sort of makes the difference.
Yeah, it's going to be – I think it's going to come down to, you know, LSU's defense, you know, forcing, you know, Tyler Murphy, who's, you know, he's not a freshman, but he's a new starter.
Yeah.
Forcing him to a mistake early. We talked about this a little bit early on before we brought you in. I don't know if you were listening, but, you know, getting him rattled, maybe a special teams turnover here. It's something where we can, you know, we've seen LSU jump out to big leads in Tiger Stadium against, you know, UAB and Kent State, and we jumped out 21-0 against Auburn. And like me and Dan were talking about earlier, we can just erase the second quarter from playing. We can just play first. If we can have the three periods like hockey, mm-hmm. We'd be freaking incredible. You know?
Yeah.
But if LSU again, you know, at home, you know, jumps out early, it'd be, again, I've been saying it every week, usually in years past, if LSU wins the toss, I prefer them to defer. If LSU wins the toss, I want them to get the ball and jump out 7-0, because I think that's the only way we can keep the fans energized. You know, maybe get a good special team stop on a kickoff. You know, get them inside the 20, and force, you know, maybe force a quick three and out and jump on real quick again. You know, hit a big play or something. I think that's I think it's got to be LSU's MO for Saturday.
Yeah, and I definitely, just to add to that, I definitely think that's also the way to play against this Florida team. I mean, I don't, we've seen it go down. It was down 7-0 to Tennessee. It was down against Arkansas early. It was down against Miami early. And, you know, we don't necessarily know that this team can come back from being down 14 points because we haven't seen it yet. But we know that it starts to sort of press when it's down 7, which is strange because, you know, you should think your offense can come back from being down 7. But that hasn't always been the case. And, you know, this is – I like to compare this Florida team to the early Nick Saban Alabama teams. And those teams didn't have all the talent on offense. And they weren't really built to come back on you. They were built to sort of get ahead and stay ahead, and that was it. Right. I don't know that you can necessarily count on Florida to do the comeback thing yet.
Yeah, well, just thinking back to last year's LSU Florida game, LSU was down 14-6. We might as well have been down 30 because we couldn't. I mean, we pressed the entire second half trying to just get a touchdown and, you know, and a chance at a 2-point conversion to try to tie that game. And so I know exactly where you're coming from. I've seen LSU offenses press in a pass down 7. You know, this LSU offense, you know, wouldn't.
You could
wouldn't,
be down 70.
Press.
It wouldn't need a press.
I'd prefer not to be.
Yeah, but, I mean, yeah. But you know, you still got a glimmer of hope there at down 70.
Without question. So, I mean, offensively, do you think – I mean, you see Florida's offense being able to, you know, move the ball with great success. What do you think they need to do?
I don't think it's necessarily great success. I mean, I think if Florida gets to 30 points, which, you know, is pretty unlikely, I'd say Florida definitely wins this game. If Florida gets to 28 points, I think Florida might still win this game. But I'm not confident in this offense getting 27, 28 points, even on an LSU defense that I think is, you know, growing into itself. And I think, you know, doesn't really necessarily have all the talent and all the seasoning that last year's defense did, so on and so forth. Yeah, but can Florida stop LSU's offense from scoring 24 points or 21 points? I mean, you know, if Florida's offense can't get more than 20 points, can Florida win? I don't know. So it's – if the game is played at a higher speed and a higher pace and it's not 14-13 in the fourth quarter, I think LSU's definitely pulling away with it. If the game is played in, you know, a fashion that allows Florida to maybe get out to an early lead and sort of keep LSU at bay, then I like Florida. But, you know, I just don't know. This is a really hard game to pick for me because I just don't know enough about both of these, the sort of mystery units, the LSU defense and the Florida offense, to know for sure how they're going to react in a situation like this.
Andy, you got anything for I'm sorry, Dan, do you have anything for Andy? Any questions or?
I'm mostly curious about, I mean, I think the matchup I'm most interested about, you've already touched on a little bit, is the receivers against Florida's corners. Because, I mean, you're talking about, you know, two future NFL wide receivers against two, probably three, if you count Hargreaves, future NFL corners. So, yeah. How does that play out?
I don't know. I mean, the things you were talking about earlier about Jarvis Landry being hurt, you know, it's music to our ears, because I think two wide receivers who are really good might be enough to stress Florida's secondary. If you only got like 1.75, if one guy's hurt, you might want to give the edge to Florida there, because I don't think it's just two or three guys who have NFL futures in Florida's secondary. I think it's, you know, definitely think Marcus Roberson, who is finally healthy. He's missed the last three games, but Will Muschamp swears up and down that he'll be back. You think he's probably the best cover corner Florida still has. Purifoy came into his own last game, and he's obviously, you know, playmaker and can do a bunch of different things with his athleticism. Hargreaves is incredible. I mean, I've been making this argument for most of the year now, and that he might be Florida's best freshman corner ever. And Florida's had guys like Larry Kennedy, Joe Hayden, Janoris Jenkins be freshman corners. So that's three guys. And then I really like Brian Roll, who has become a really physical corner in the slot. And then I think, you know, you might find Jalen Watkins, who is now playing more safety than corner on an NFL roster someday, because he's a really smart guy, knows all the cues, and has really figured out how to play cornerback over 4 years. So, you know, four guys who could play in the NFL without even looking at your safeties is a lot of talent. And I think some of that talent, you know, Hargreaves obviously is still young. Roll's just a sophomore, or Poole, sorry, You know, these guys aren't necessarily fully ensconced in Will Muschamp's defense yet, but they know enough to do some things. And knowing enough to do some things, maybe, you know, if you're making mistakes but also making big plays, is dangerous enough.
Yeah, I'm really curious about how that chess game will play out, because
yeah.
We use a lot of, you know, under Cameron, we've used a good bit of, like, pre-snap motions and pre-snap movement to unveil the coverages, and we've had a lot of success with three wide receiver formations and getting Landry into the slot and matched up on linebackers, but Florida seems like a team that's really equipped to not have to go that route. They can stick out there with their secondary and cover those guys. Now,
yeah,
of course, those are also teams that are stacking the box against us, so do you think Florida's going to do the same thing and put 8-9 in the box like Kerry was talking about early in the game, or...
I doubt it. I mean, I really think Florida's base personnel at this point is a lot like a nickel. I mean, it's you see a lot of 4-2-5 sort of things, and sometimes you see 3-3-5. Sometimes you see 3-4, you know, with a guy who's maybe not necessarily a linebacker at one of those four positions. So, you know, I think you're going to see slot guys matched up against slot corners. I mean, Florida does a really good job not isolating guys, linebackers especially, in coverage. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of that. And it's probably going to be, can your man beat this man? And if you can, hats off to you.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that question. And that's another fun thing, is that Florida's, you know, I don't think Florida is going to take the risk of putting 8 or 9 men in the box and letting Mettenberger try to beat him. Even though Florida might have more confidence in its secondary than any other team in the country, I think you want to give people back there a chance against Mettenberger and not just leave guys on islands, because he's that good and he will throw people open. I mean, and you've got two great wide receivers in Landry and Beckham. They're both healthy. Those are, I would guess, maybe the number one and number two talented wide receivers Florida will see all season. So, you know, it's going to be individual matchups. It's going to be, can you get off blocks? Can you make the right run fit? Can you get the guy in the right position on the 3rd and 15 and make sure that he doesn't get the first down? And it's going to be a play-by-play war, really.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I echo all that. Just to kind of add to it a little bit, I don't see a defense as good as Florida's changing their philosophy against a team, especially who's proven both on the ground and in the air. You know, Florida, who's been so good defensively so far this season, why would they change, you know, their attack, you know, based on, you know, what we saw from LSU offenses in years past? I think that's just that's ludicrous to do. And yeah. I don't know why other teams are doing it. Maybe because they have less faith in their defense than, say, a Florida might. So that's kind of, you know, Florida, I stick to your guns and you try to beat LSU the way that you know how to play defense. You don't change. The same way LSU, you know, has played for so many years past. You think about the 2011 team that was stout defensively and, you know, efficient on offense. They didn't change anything for anybody. This is like, this is what we're doing. You know, it might have been boring on offense at times, but it was efficient in 2011. So, you know, you're not going to change. You know, the same thing with Florida's offense. If it's working and you're winning games, you know, it might not be pretty. You're only winning games 24-3 when you think you should be winning them 45-0.
Yeah.
You know, the end of the day, it's W. And, you know, it's all that matters, especially when it was a conference play. You know, as a Florida fan, I would just put myself in their shoes. As long as you get a Baton Rouge with victory, you don't care if it's 48-45 or 10-8.
Nope. I'll take whatever.
Right, exactly. At this point, me too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And now I'm thinking, you know, go ahead.
Now, if we hold, like you were talking about, we hold Florida 24 points, I'm feeling pretty good about LSU's chances on Saturday. And 28-30, getting kind of iffy. So you can kind of see where I'm leaning when we go spread wise here in a little bit. So, you know, that being said, unless Dan has anything else, we're going to move on to the Pick'em Challenge.
I'm good.
Okay. Go Show Pick'em. We do it every week here. People who might be listening for the first time, we do this every week. We pick about 12 games. We keep standings throughout the year. But if you haven't joined and you're hearing the show, and you're hearing this for the first time, you're hearing about this for the first time, it's never too late to join and compete for weekly prizes. Just visit Anna Valley Shook, and there is a link to the it's on the top page right now. It's on one of the main stories up right now. just click on the alt, just click on the link, follow the just follow the prompts and sign up and start picking. We're gonna pick a handful of games. We're not gonna pick all 12 because we'll be here till midnight. Andy, what we normally do in dance, I think it's the first time you've been on the show with me. We're just gonna give like a quick couple sentences on why we think each team's gonna win. We don't need to go in great detail about, you know, why we think Missouri might cover against Georgia. We're not, just a quick little synopsis. So I'll just go around the horn and I'm sorry if ESPN is patenting that or not. the chances of somebody at ESPN listening to this and suing me over it, I think are greatly underrated. So, all right, so we'll kick it off. We'll start in the Southeastern Conference, and we will go Missouri traveling to Georgia, I believe. Yeah, Missouri is in Sanford Stadium. Missouri getting 8.5. Andy, what do you like? Who do you like in this game?
God, 8.5, that's right. I'll take Missouri. 8.5, I think Missouri's just got a little too much firepower for Georgia to keep it. I think Georgia wins, but Missouri covers.
All right, Dan?
Yeah, same thing for me. I think the injuries are mounting for Georgia, so it'll be enough for Missouri to cover, but Georgia will still win the game.
Yeah. Missouri's got a potent offense. I mean, they've come out, you know, after last year, their first season in the SEC, talking all that smack, and they got put in their place. Franklin's playing pretty good ball now, and they're scoring points in droves, and Georgia's defense isn't stout. But and I think I'm worried about Gurley. I'm picking Missouri. I'm worried about Gurley a little bit. I think he's questionable. I think they said they might have him back. But if he's not playing, Missouri might win this game because if they can't control the ground game because they don't have their other running back either. So I like Missouri to cover. Outside chance of an upset, yeah, depending on the status on Gurley. So moving right along, we will go, let's see. And for those of you who might be listening, hopefully this show's out tomorrow. We have a Thursday game on the schedule this week, so make sure you get your picks in before Thursday, or at least that game. I think you still have those Saturday morning for the rest of the games, if not mistaken. Here ought to be a fun one. A&M at Ole Miss. Ole Miss getting 6.5 at home. Andy.
Jeez. Sure. Give me Ole Miss. I like Ole Miss at home. I think it's a young team. Plays better at home. Touchdown, they can do it.
All right, Dan?
I'll go with Johnny Football. I like A&M.
Yeah, Ole Miss is reeling now. They came in with a lot of hype this season. They won their first three. They've lost two in a row now. So basically, they lose this game. Their Super Bowl was next week against LSU, unfortunately. They're going to play their freaking hearts out for that game. My dad, being the ultimate LSU pessimist, he was visiting with me on Sunday. He said, man, you see how Ole Miss, how bad they're playing? He said, that quarterback of Ole Miss is going to have a game of his life against LSU. I said, Dad, don't start your, I said, Dad, don't start your crap. Let's beat Florida first. You know? So let's worry about them. Yeah, but you're right. I mean, so. But no, the way they've been playing, maybe they'll get up for this game. Maybe they're, but you would think they'd get up for, Auburn. But I was kind of shocked that Auburn beat them. I really thought Ole Miss was going to take care of business, but I don't see it. I don't see it happening. I like A&M to cover that 6.5. So let's see, Red River Shootout, not really as great a game as it once was because Texas kind of reeling a little bit. This is Texas. We're talking about Ole Miss's Super Bowl. This is Texas' Super Bowl. So, Oklahoma's is clarified as the home team, but they play this in Jerry World, or is this still at the Old Cotton Bowl?
Old Cotton Bowl, I think.
Yeah. Okay. I thought so. That's still where they have the fair or whatever. Anyway, Oklahoma's favored by 14.5. Andy.
14. Yeah, give me Oklahoma. Yeah, it's not going to be even that close. Just run over Texas.
Yeah, I agree. I think Texas is just a speed bump. Oklahoma's a way better team this year.
Yeah, I'm going to make it unanimous. Texas almost got beat by Iowa State the other night. So, and I was really hoping they would. So,
yeah.
I'll be unanimous and go Oklahoma. Last one before we get to LSU in Florida, Oregon traveling to Washington. taking on the Huskies, who damn near came close to beating Stanford the other night. Outgained them by a 2-1 margin. Just couldn't get, you know, just had some other miscues and some other things happened, and they couldn't get over that hump. But they are getting 14.5 at home against the Oregon Ducks.
14.5. Yeah, I'm taking Washington at 14.5. That's, you know, 10 points. Yeah, Washington's a much better team than people think, I think. You know, that secondary has done a lot of good things. I was looking up numbers on Florida's secondary today, and Washington's kept popping up. So, yeah, Washington.
Hi, Dan.
I'm actually going to take Oregon based purely on the fact that I think they've been one of the better teams at beating the spread for the last several years. Obviously, they have a new coach, so maybe something changes because of that, but I'll go with history on that. Pick Oregon.
Yeah, this is the Steve Sarkisian interview rounds continue to make their way, and you know, for his USC upcoming USC gig or interview, at least. I like the way Washington's playing football. I really didn't expect them to play as well as they did against Stanford and outgain them the way they did. You know, Oregon's a different animal. I think head and shoulders above Stanford. Not really watching either team, but just seeing highlights of Oregon every week, and they're just ridiculous. I mean, if it's not for Baylor averaging 17,000 points a game, Oregon's far and away the best offense, you know, in the country. For some reason at home, I still like Washington to cover that 14.5. I think that's a big number for a team that's very good at home. That stadium is very raucous. It's people in Seattle are just good football fans. I mean, the freaking Seahawks are great at home. Washington's got a great atmosphere in their stadium. I like Washington to cover. I'm a little worried about them coming off that close loss to Stanford, but they're at home. They'll be re-energized for this one too. They should have no problem getting that out. So, all right, game of the week. Well, in our eyes, anyway. Florida traveling to LSU. The line is 7.5. We will let our Florida fan lead it off. Our Florida blogger fan, everything.
Yeah. Go ahead. Okay, so here's the thing. If it was 6.5, I might take LSU. If it's 7.5, I'm going with Florida. I think Florida is no worse than a touchdown worse than LSU. I think that offense, I mean, maybe it's a 28-21 game or something. Maybe it's 31-24. I think Florida can score enough to keep it within 7.
All right, Dan.
I'm debating. I was going with your line of reasoning, too. I think they're pretty evenly matched. But I'm going to take LSU purely because they're at home, and I don't think Murphy has seen an environment like Tiger Stadium.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Yeah. That hook. That hook brings you back. John Pop said it. That half point. That half point is tricky. I mean, we've
it
seen
really is.
I mean, ex-Northwestern Ohio State bettors about the half point. Well, it didn't really come into play, but just late touchdowns. And I think it was what other game was it? It fell. Well, LSU Georgia. It was a 3.5, I think. And mm-hmm. It was ended up being a 3-point game. So that hook's a dangerous thing. If you're a truly betting person. But I'm right there with y'all as far as the touchdown thing. I'm a little. You know, I can see this going. You know, LSU might get a late field goal to maybe go up 2 scores. I think it's a touchdown game. Mm-hmm. I was kind of just plugging in winners here as I was listening to y'all talk, and I pegged the game at 31-24 LSU. So with that, I'm gonna. And LSU's not great at covering the spread, minus last week. So, and actually they covered against Georgia. So what do I know? I'm sitting here talking. I'm contradicting myself as I'm talking. I do it pretty much every week. It's tough. I think I'm right there with you, Andy. I think it's a touchdown game. I think it's 31-24. So I'm right there wishing that 28-21 at 31-24 range. So it's going to really all depend on, LSU, you know, keeping Florida's offense at bay a little bit and making a stop here or there. If they make a couple more, if they make, more than their fair share of stops, LSU could win us going away. But, I still think that second quarter thing, me and Dan talked about, kind of worrisome. I can see LSU jumping out to a 14-0 lead, but I can also see Florida popping back in and only being down 17-14.5. So, we'll see. But for purposes of spread, give me Florida to cover, to make a long story short. That will do it for us. For Andy, thanks for hopping on with us tonight.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
From Andy, can fans follow you on Twitter?
You can follow Alligator Army at Alligator Army, and you can follow me at Andy Hutchins.
All right, and I know Dan, you have a Twitter account too. I didn't know it at the top of the show, that's why I didn't mention it.
Yeah, I'm at @ATVS_PaulCrew, which is my blogging name on
right.
And the Valley Shook.
Right, and you can see Dan who writes on the Paul Crew, you can see Billy's stuff and poses. You can see all their continuing previews of this game coming up in the days to come. I know, Billy will have his usual stuff up there. So will Dan and, Bozo will have his words as all. Podcast, pushing buttons behind the scenes. Our esteemed producer, forgot to mention at the top of the show, the Cajun Billy D. Williams, hanging out, listening to us intently, has to go and edit all this stuff up now. I didn't scramble up words too bad tonight, I don't think. So I think he'll have a fairly easy time putting this one out there for the fans to get to. So, that being said, Andy, thanks again. Again, that site is alligatorarmy.com for the SB Nations. We are in the Valley Shook. Go show your original LSU podcast. For Dan filling in tonight, good job, Dan. Thanks for coming on with me and Andy. There's no problem. It's been Go Show. We say Go Tigers. Donna, donna, donna. Go Gators. Except no. All right. Edit that out. That was poop. Podcast. Leave that out. That was complete crap. That was my fandom kicking in because I like to, that's my thing. I mock other teams' cheers in the stadium because I sit in the opposing team section.
I'll take that nonsense.
Yeah, that was poop.
Hey, I appreciate it. Leave it in as far as I'm concerned. That was a damn good rendition.
Yeah, it was meant to be sarcastic, but it just didn't come off that way.
That came off honest. That came off like a guy
all right.
Who has
anyway, this has been a Go Show. We are finished. Go Tigers.